So, as a lot of you have tried to inform me, I just broke 50k subs. That's a lot of substitutes, subreddits, submissives, submarines, and Subway sandwiches. So I figured this would be a good time to do a quackanack. I haven't done a quackanack since back when I was at 4,000 subs last November after the Utah video blew up, and I basically went from 0 to 4k overnight, so I figured from then on I'd do Q&As at 4 times each power of 10, but living in China has gotten me inherently a bit skeptical of the number 4, and 50k is a bigger milestone than 40k anyway. Also, to address the elephant in the room, yes, I lost some weight on my head. I liked looking like circa 1970 John Lennon, and I only get a haircut every like 10 months on average, so don't worry. It'll get back to where it was. But having long hair is itchy and annoying. After an uncharacteristically short preamble, I'm your host, Tor Parsons. These are my co-hosts, Jollibee the Durian and Thimble the Doll, and welcome to Tor's Cabinet of Curiosities. Most of these questions were submitted by my friends on the Tor's Cabinet Discord, which you can join by donating to the Tor's Cabinet Patreon. Number one, why is Jollibee? I explain Jollibee's backstory in part of the end credits of each episode, and I've explained it in more detail in some comments, but here's the full story of both my co-hosts in more detail than I've ever told it. Thimble long predates Jollibee. This doll has belonged to my family for a long time, I'm not sure how long, but my mom played with her as a kid. There are several other dolls my family has that look exactly like her. She's not super old, because she's made of molded plastic as opposed to porcelain, probably 1970s in origin, possibly 1970s Norway, given the outfits that some of the dolls have. That's where my mom's side of the family is from. My mom grew up in California, in the Bay Area, but we still have cousins in Norway, and she grew up spending time there. So, that could have been where she got Thimble and her sister dolls. But she doesn't remember either. So, I play D&D. Here's a fun, but ultimately irrelevant to the story, bit of Tor lore. One of my D&D buddies is the grandson of John Zerzan, the anarcho-primitivist thinker who was a big influence on the Unabomber, and was once even suspected of himself being the Unabomber. Zerzan is literally a family friend. He once passed out from dehydration at a party at my family's house. It wasn't like a hunger strike or anything, it wasn't related to his radical politics, he's just old. Anyway, a few years ago, I created a new D&D character who was an artificer, which is like a magical engineer. My character's name is Lady Kumundor Zorka. She has a Hungarian name and cultural vibe for no reason other than I think Hungarian is a cool language, and her whole thing is that she designs living clockwork dolls to do her bidding, and she's always accompanied by her familiar, Thimble, who is her trigger-happy security doll who fights with a straight razor and is aggressively loyal to Zorka. Here's a painting my sister Gwen, who's an artist, did of her impression of Zorka and Thimble. Zorka is friendly and warm and conflict-averse and has to regularly restrain Thimble from threatening to, quote, make people dead. But sometimes she has Thimble serve as a hard bargaining negotiator, which is a skill Zorka doesn't have. When I'm playing Zorka and Thimble, of course, I have Thimble on the table with me. So, when I started thinking about making my fun but pretty unsuccessful college radio podcast Tor's Cabinet of Curiosities into a YouTube channel, it occurred to me to have a setup where I have a green screen talk bubble above me, providing a visual for what I'm talking about. I can't remember how long it took for me to come up with the next step. Not a talk bubble above me, a character on the table with me, with a talk bubble, who I can call my co-host and use as a mascot for the show. Well, who else but Thimble the Doll, of course. Then I suggested that plan to my girlfriend at the time, who I've now amicably split from, so ladies, I'm available. No, actually, I'm not available. I'm neither taken nor available because I'm going back to China later this year and I don't want to deal with a long-distance relationship again. Anyway, I explained the plan set up to my girlfriend while I was studying abroad in China, and she was like, "That doll creeps me out. Find another co-host." Meanwhile, I wanted to make a video making fun of the eating smelly food announcement on the trains in China. Like I said in my social credit episode, there are announcements on the high-speed trains that warn you of a long list of stuff you're not supposed to do on board, notably including, to my amusement, eating smelly food. So I was like, I want to do a video where I bite into the outside of a whole durian on the train. Obviously, I wasn't really going to open up the durian and stink up the whole train. It would just be a fun visual gag. I didn't have an idea for what Tours Cabinet video that would end up being in, but I'd find a way to work it in. On December 14th, 2023, I was on my last planned high-speed train trip in China from Guangzhou down to Hong Kong, where I'd fly back to the US. I was in the Guangzhou South Station, waiting for the boarding call for my train, and I was like, well, I guess my chance for doing the durian video is over. So what? That was a nice idea. And then I noticed a fruit stand right there in the station. Here's what the Guangzhou South Station looks like. It's gigantic. That is a normal-sized train station waiting room in China. And they had a bright yellow durian hanging on a hook. Well, maybe I could do that video after all. I went up to the two women running the fruit stand and, in halting Mandarin, asked if I could buy that durian. They responded in equally halting Mandarin, because their first language was Cantonese, by telling me the durian there was plastic and just for advertising, but here were some real durians, and they showed me the durians, which looked bruised and gross and were much too expensive for me to buy one on a whim, so I said thanks and went back to sit down. Then, a few minutes later, it occurred to me, I don't have to eat the durian. So I went back over there and asked to buy the plastic durian. They thought that was hilarious and discussed among themselves, then said, sure, 50 yuan, which is about $7. I paid them and departed with my plastic durian. I filmed the clip on the train successfully, then I just had a plastic durian. After a few days of storing it in a smelly locker in a Hong Kong hostel, I checked in for my flight home and told the check-in agents, do you want a plastic durian? I'll give you this plastic durian for free. It's heavy and spiky, so I definitely can't bring it on as a carry-on, and I bought it on a whim, so there's no way I'll pay to check it as a bag all the way back to Portland. And they said, actually, we can box it up for you as an extra check bag for free. So I said, why the hell not, and arrived home with a plastic durian. A few weeks into 2024, I played a D&D game in which, since the durian had been right there in my family's entryway since I got back from China, I decided that Zorka would bring a durian to life temporarily as a show of her power. She named him Jollibee, of course after the Filipino fast food chain, the first vaguely Southeast Asian associated word that came to mind. His catchphrase was, "Good day, sir!" And he would only ever answer yes-no questions with an enthusiastic, "Yes!" He was a very fun character for that one day. I also decided that Thimble would make a monocle and top hat for the durian, so Jollibee looked kind of like the planter's peanut, although I never actually made that in real life. And then it occurred to me, there's my co-host right there, Jollibee the Durian, with his top hat and monocle. Once I graduated from college in May 2024, I paid my sister Gwen, the artist, to paint a background for my show and sculpt a top hat and monocle for the Durian. She wasn't sure about the monocle, so she suggested a sort of derpy Mr. Potato Head kind of face instead with a big fat mustache, and I was like, yeah, that's even better. Rest is history. Someone commented on my Democracy Manifest video that I should bring in more and more characters until my room is packed full of them and the intro spiel where I introduce all my co-hosts is 30 minutes long, and Andrew, you have no idea how right you are. My room is full of wacky little characters, and the only reason I don't include them on Tours Cabinet is because my intro spiel would get too long. Introducing Fucko the Clown! My Patreon tier by that name is not named after this statuette. I got him last Christmas as a present from my brother who was like, I went to Goodwill and bought the weirdest thing I could find. This guy is named Fucko the Clown after the Patreon tier, which is in turn a reference to an episode I still haven't done because I'm waiting for a particular collaboration to happen. You'll know. Also, here's another member of my real life cabinet of curiosities. Oh, Thimble. Oh no. All right, well. Here's Juscelino, the capybara! for my last term at Lewis and Clark College, when I had to move into my dorm several days early because of an ice storm and couldn't go down to Eugene to get any of my stuff except what could fit in one backpack, I used Husanino as my pillow. At some point, I might make stop-motion videos with the adventures of all my characters and have those be Patreon exclusives. Husanino is going to be preceded by the Capybara song every time he appears, and he will die in every episode like Kenny in South Park. The last character I want, but I don't yet have, is this Shoggoth plushie, who is sold by an AI alignment nonprofit, and I'm not sure you can get anymore. A Shoggoth is a creature from the stories of H.P. Lovecraft that some people use as a metaphor for the dangers of AI. But when I eventually get the Shoggoth, it's going to be named Sludds. That's another question I've gotten. What is Sludds Productions in the intro sequence? It's just a fake name for a production company that supposedly owns Tor's Cabinet. Audio's getting a little janky here because I am fiddling with my setup in the process. But yeah, Sludds Productions is just a fake name for a production company that supposedly owns Tor's Cabinet to make the intro feel more professional. Soon I'm going to actually incorporate Sludds Productions as a business so that I can file my taxes for my increasing Tor's Cabinet earnings more smoothly, but I'll be its only employee. Sludds is a nonsense word I made up that I go by on the internet in a few places. Like, my Reddit account is Mr. Sludds, and I picked it because it's inherently gross sounding and therefore unlikely to be taken. But when I get the Shoggoth, Sludds is gonna mean the Shoggoth. Jenny Girl asks, what is your favorite animal? And why is it a penguin? I actually hate penguins. Okay, I don't hate penguins, but they're fine. When my brother was a toddler, he watched Happy Feet literally multiple times a day for years. He made being into penguins his whole personality. I don't think he even remembers that period anymore. That was when he was like age 3 through 5, but I sure do, because out of sibling rivalry, I then had to hate penguins, and almost 20 years later, I'm not sure I've fully shaken that. No, I'm fine with penguins, but I'll always hate Happy Feet. Sorry, George Miller. Did you know that the director of Happy Feet, George Miller, is also the man who made the entire Mad Max series? And the Babe the Pig movies? The absolute range of this man. My favorite animals are actually owls, because they are so extra. Their feathers are so fine that they can fly completely silently. They have eyes that are tubes like telephoto lenses, and they have ears that are slightly asymmetrical. One's higher on their head than the other, so that they can hear in 3D, basically. They can pinpoint the location a sound is coming from, as well as we can see where something is. Mantis shrimp are up there too, because they also have superpowers. You know about mantis shrimp. If you're nerdy enough to watch this show, you know about mantis shrimp. Also, elephants, because elephants are where we come from. Elephants created humans as slaves for them when they had a civilization on the seafloor of what's now the Mediterranean. That's my favorite Tumblr conspiracy theory. Link to the full story in the description. I love that kind of absurd theorizing. Montferrat, it would be very interesting to hear about your planned trips to China and what reports you already plan to have there. Well, I don't spoil future episodes, but yes, I'm hopefully going back to China starting at the end of summer 2025 and possibly lasting until Chinese New Year in February. I'll have to unlist my tour in China episodes as soon as I start applying for a visa so I don't run afoul of the CCP, but those episodes will be back eventually. I'm doing English teaching with CIEE, who will place me in a school somewhere in China. I'm hoping to go to Chongqing, because that city is an M.C. Escher painting come to life. There's no urban fabric on Earth that compares. I went to Chongqing for one day last time I was in China, when I was spending 4 months studying abroad in Beijing for the first half of my senior year of college, but that wasn't enough. If I can't be in or near Chongqing, I might go to Taiwan instead, which would definitely be easier for keeping my YouTube channel going while I'm there, but I'd have to learn to read and write traditional characters, and that would be a pain in the
penis.
Speaking of my travels, my best friend Kinley, the musician for all these episodes, asked, what's your favorite China travel story you don't have an obvious reason to include in an episode? That's a great question. However, most of my favorite China travel stories, I've already found ways to wedge them into episodes. One that I doubt I would otherwise have the chance to talk about was my Harbin misadventure. Early in December 2023, a few weeks before I headed home, I went up to Harbin, not far from the border with Russia, in an area that's still inhabited by ethnic Chinese people but feels really culturally Russian. Here are some of the videos I took of downtown Harbin. As you can tell, it was really cold. I stayed in a comically janky little hotel that occupied a single story, the eighth floor of a big mixed-use building, and the bed I slept on was a mattress on the floor that was bleeding fuzz and full of cigarette burns. The two receptionists, seeing a white person, began speaking Russian to me and refused to believe I wasn't Russian even after I checked in with my US passport. The main attraction people go to Harbin for is the Winter Festival, where there are giant, amazing ice sculptures several stories tall. I went to the location of the ice festival to find that I'd done no research, and I was several weeks early. The river that Harbin is on had just frozen enough to cut ice blocks from it, and they just started to carve them. So what I saw was a big, tall chain link fence with pictures of previous Harbin Ice Festival sculptures on it, and behind it I heard a lot of electric saws and drills buzzing, but that was it. Another funny misadventure. In my episode Slow Train to China, I described my trip on a sleeper train from Beijing to Chongqing, but one thing I didn't mention was that when I was on that train in the middle of the night, one of the people I shared my sleeper compartment with snored so loud that I literally woke him up and suggested paying him to get off at the next station and take the next train. To be fair, I was tired and sick on that trip and not thinking straight. Doesn't come across in the video, but I had a horrific cold and possibly a fever. I really shouldn't have been traveling under those circumstances, but I'd made an elaborate set of train and hotel reservations for my many stop week-long journey to Beijing down to Hong Kong, and some of those reservations were non-refundable. Either way, I rehearsed what I was going to say many times, then I woke him up and said it to him, but I was so embarrassed that I was immediately like, actually, never mind. The gambit was successful, though. He realized that he had to go to the bathroom, so by waking him up, I was able to get to sleep before he got back to sleep, and his snoring spooled up for takeoff again. He was traveling with his girlfriend, who seemed unperturbed. How much do you have to love someone to tolerate that? I went down to the vestibule at the end of the sleeper car, and I could still hear him snoring from there. Relationship goals, I guess. Not really a misadventure, but I think my favorite experience in China was that at the very end I spent 4 days in Hong Kong and absolutely fell in love with that city. I'm not sure I can put into words quite the effect it had on me, but I've never fallen so hard for a city. Even now, even thoughts about Hong Kong's situation that I'll say at some point, but not now because I have to apply for a new Chinese visa soon, even now I feel like life there has a vivacity that you don't find on the mainland. I feel strong attachments to places, especially cities. I like to describe my type of autism as I think in places, but before Hong Kong, I'd never arrived in a place I'd never been before and been hit with like, yes, this is a good place. I felt such an overpowering sense of beauty and belonging that I wondered if I hadn't eaten a dumpling with some dodgy mushrooms in it or something. The whole time I was there, I was like, shit, I devoted years to learning Mandarin and simplified characters when I really should have been pouring that time into learning Cantonese and traditional characters. Language Simp has a video where he makes fun of the people who learn Mandarin versus the people who learn Cantonese, and I felt so singled out by that. At some point, I will live semi-long-term in Hong Kong. I'll learn at least some Cantonese. At the moment, I don't know when that'll be, but it'll happen. Let's get into some good comments I've gotten. This one I just found sort of eerie because this guy is asking, why do I imagine Marin County when I see you? Where does your music choice come from? Those two questions back to back. And Kinley, the musician for my channel, is from Marin County. Vaguely creepy coincidence. This is just nothing to say here. Really fucking great comment. Other things I have seen Jollibee rightfully compared to include the Sublime Sun logo and the pineapple from Télé-Français. Now, you know you've made it as a YouTuber when people are having dreams about your content. Both on the Discord and in my comments, I've encountered a few people who have indeed had Tor's Cabinet dreams. Sawyer, one of my most prolific episode topic suggesters on the Discord, had a dream I put out a 3-hour video simply titled Mpreg and even illustrated his dream. Let's all enjoy this fan art. There'll be more fan art to come. Don't worry. It doesn't involve Tor Parsons Mpreg, and if you try to post that in the Discord, I'll kick you out. I feel like a 3-hour video about Mpreg isn't exactly something I'd do, but it's not something I definitely wouldn't do. More a Jenny Nicholson type of video. If you want the closest thing there is to a 3-hour Tor's Cabinet video about Mpreg, check out Strange Eon's 2-part series about the Omegaverse. The second one gets a little bit into the critical theory weeds, but they're fantastic videos, and you should watch Strange Eons. Another person had this dream, which, I mean, this is so fantastic that I honestly want to make this video now. Tell me what, If you all can scrounge up $500, just pool your money and pay me up front. We'll work out how you're supposed to send it on the Discord once you have the money. I will make this video. I will watch the My Little Pony video, and I will work out some way it's an allegory for Pearl Harbor and U.S. isolationism. This sounds like tons of fun. Other people comment on the ubiquitous hydration at the end of my videos, like in this especially colorful comment where someone always thinks my gay little water bottle is cough syrup that I'm gonna pour all over Jollibee. That makes one of us, but tell you what,
this is gonna hurt me more than it hurts you. Oh boy, is this ever great. Get crunked, landfill fruit!
You are not the only person to think it's cough syrup, though. I should do a video where I go to Poland. Don't worry, it's not over. If there's one type of comment I get a lot that I don't love, it's the ones that infantilize me and treat me as something cute. I want Tor to be my son, or I wish I could adopt Tor. I thought those comments were funny at first, but they rapidly became less funny the more I saw of them. You adorable little nerd boy, those kinds of things. And I think they're genuinely intended as compliments, but I see them the same way as I would a southerner saying, bless your heart. A few days after the Utah fake towns video first blew up, I was working on an aborted video that was going to be about Cybersmith, the Tumblr human pet guy, and after working on it a bit, I took some edibles in the evening. With the concept of human pets on my mind, while I was high, I wrote out this paragraph. God, it would suck, but suck in a bittersweet irony way, if my public image when discovered by the internet turned out to be as a human pet. As in, I am beloved as a totem rather than a human being. People call me condescending, backhanded insults like pure and earnest. I am not taken seriously. I am taken as cute. A wholesome meme. And I have a successful and comfortable life, but without great achievement, because on my first contact with a higher intelligence, I am domesticated. I have such a flowery writing style when I'm high. Remember when I discovered all those weird, possibly AI-written romance novels about Elon Musk that were written in, like, Regency-era English and had shit like Elon saying indubitably? I write like that when I'm high. But I do stand by what I said there. Now, to be fair, I guess it's better to be cute than not cute. And look, I have a doll and a durian and a clown and a capybara that I call my co-hosts. It doesn't get more twee than that. I sure as hell am not some dour authoritative professor, nor do I want to be seen as one. But I do want to be seen as an authoritative YouTuber. Does Tom Scott get these comments? JJ McCullough? Wendigoon? Blame it on Jorge? That's the type of person I want to be compared to. I don't want to be seen as Sammy Classic Sonic fan all grown up. I don't want to have the same kind of, oh, look how adorable this autistic boy is when he gets talking about his interests appeal that Francis Bourgeois did. I know the haircut is going to be controversial with the fans, and I'll say it again, I promise I'll let it get good and long before I cut it again, but one of the reasons I got it cut this short was so that I look a little more like an adult. Then there's the celebrity comparisons. I like those. You're gonna have to come up with new celebrity comparisons for me now that my hair is short. When I comb my hair in the morning now, I have to make sure I don't look like Buster Bluth or like Hitler, both of which are alarmingly easy to make me look like. I'm feeling maybe Andy Partridge from XTC in his youth. That's much better. I've always got a ton of Paul Dano comparisons. That and John Lennon are understandably my most common ones. For Democracy Manifest, which was the second to last video I made with my long hair, there's still one in the editing process. I leaned heavy into the John Lennon circa 1971 look with the kind of feminine stripy shirt unbuttoned up top, and people noticed. Also, not the only Shaggy comparison I've gotten. There's a whole host of other more obscure comparisons I've seen. John Denver, sure. Thurston Moore from Sonic Youth, love that, love Sonic Youth. Someone on the Locust video think I look like Jeffrey Dahmer, love that a little less. Liquid Chris, not sure how much I love that, but I for sure see it. If you don't know who that is, don't look it up. Someone saw this comparison and someone else didn't. They mean I look like Klaus from a series of unfortunate events, which is fantastic because I've identified with Klaus ever since I first read those books in elementary school. The one obscure celebrity comparison that I had an eye out for but I didn't see until recently, a guy who isn't exactly a household name today but I think might have been my number one celebrity doppelganger in my long hair era, was The Doors keyboardist Ray Manzarek. I was going to make this a riddle for my audience in this video. There's a minor 60s celebrity who I really look like or did when my hair was longer. Does anyone know who it could be? And then sure enough, I got a Ray Manzarek comment. I think now I've unlocked my full set of celebrity lookalikes. Of course, other people saw my luscious long locks and had a different thought. For some reason, probably autism, a vast number of my fans are trans and they have been desperately trying to crack this egg. So many "you'd make a beautiful girl" comments. I am definitely a grungler. I support the trans so much I'm a regular Halamede. Look, I know who Halamede is. Call me a poser and I will strike the most awesome pose you've ever seen. But the grungler isn't an egg. He's a chill cishet guy who hangs out with a mostly trans friend group. That's the definition of a grungler. The world needs its grunglers, and I am happy to oblige. I actually had a dream myself in which I announced that I would go on estrogen if a video I put out got more than 1 million views. So fuck it. Let's do that. I won't go on estrogen for like long, but I'll do it for you and I'll report on its effects if this video gets to 1 million views in its first week. If this video hits 1 million views on or before Monday, March 24th, I will take estrogen for like a week or so and vlog what it does to me. I'm confident that this won't work. I have never gotten anything close to 1 million, let alone in a week. Even my best performing video, Utah's Fake Towns, has accrued almost 500,000 over 4 months. But I'm sure there's a way to hack a video and artificially inflate its view count with bots, so get to work, you fantastic trans autistic nerds. Thing about that is, if you get this video to 1 million with bots, I want to make as much ad revenue as I would if 1 million humans had watched it. I'm not sure having bots view this episode would get my earnings up. Estrogen isn't cheap, and if I get 1 million views in a week, but I don't earn a cumulative $1,000 or more from this video alone, over that week, I will not hold up this bargain. So yes, go ahead, try to inflate this video's view count with bots, but make sure I get paid for it. And for legal reasons, this is a joke. I've already had my channel nuked for unclear rumors of scams once before. Please do not actually do this. But I know some of you shape rotators can do it. Transgender, transhumanist, autistic tech people are the single greatest category of human. This is representative of another type of comment I get pretty often, the "I disagree with your politics but still like your content" comment. I've seen this exact sort of thing several times, like someone saying, "I usually get really mad at people I disagree with online, but somehow your political takes don't bother me that much and I'm still gonna watch your videos." Willow put it perfectly. Rad, that feels nice. It really does. I don't know why I have that effect on people. I think it's possible that it's because people see me as cute, and you can't disagree with a cute puppy even if that cute puppy is a neoliberal, which I basically am. So in that case, I guess I will grudgingly accept being cute. I also don't want to be known as a political creator. I try to keep 3/4 of my videos completely apolitical and enjoyable by people all over the political spectrum, but when I have a take that I feel needs to be heard, then yeah, I'll say it, regardless of who I think I'll offend, because my politics are pretty all over the place, and no matter who you are, you will probably find something I believe to disagree with. Most of my viewers so far are leftists. Like, not Democrats, leftists. 70% leftists is my estimate, and I'm cool with that, even though I'm definitely a liberal as opposed to a leftist. I would describe myself first and foremost as like a Noah Smith Democrat. Most of my friends in real life are leftists too. I'll be honest, I was kind of worried about the prospect of having lots of leftist fans. I love all of you so much. We've got a lovely little community here, and I don't ever want any of you to leave, let alone over politics. But yeah, I worried a lot about amassing a following of leftists and then saying something unleftist that reveals my true colors, and well, you have to admit that online leftists are not the most forgiving bunch once you say something they disagree with. I guess I'm still worried about that. I did have an opposite worry too, though, which was that as a liberal Democrat who occasionally mildly criticizes leftists, my followers might end up being mostly right-wingers, and for all my gripes about leftists, I definitely prefer a monolithic leftist audience to a monolithic MAGA audience. I don't want a politically monolithic audience at all. This is not a roller coaster. There's no "you must be this far left or this far right to ride" sign. I want an audience that's diverse in every possible way, including politically, and I'm reasonably satisfied with how that's turning out. My audience is pretty diverse, except super trans and super autistic, which are two good things. Still though, I worried that simply by sometimes criticizing some leftists, I'd be seen as a right-wing creator. I've heard it said that online, if you agree with the left on 99% of issues and the right on 1%, both the left and the right will agree that you're on the right. The left will chuck you out on your ass for one minor transgression, and as soon as that happens, the right will immediately start chanting, "One of us! One of us!" I watched this video essay recently investigating the question, why is there no alt-left pipeline? Which is a good question. What was known as the alt-right 10 years ago has completely taken over the mainstream right, not just in America, but the whole Western world. And we saw the biggest resurgence of leftism since the 1960s at the same time. Why didn't that translate into political power? There should at least be a robust leftist third party in America that can, like, win a few states and some seats in Congress. I probably wouldn't vote for it, but it should exist. You guys deserve your voice heard in the halls of power. But asking leftists why there's no alt-left pipeline is like asking fish to describe the properties of water. And in that video, nobody admitted the obvious answer. Because the left doesn't want one. They absolutely don't act like they want new supporters. The left purging wannabe supporters is a fundamental part of the alt-right pipeline. You don't see this kind of thing on the right. As a rule, with exceptions, leftist influencers don't accept ex-MAGA into their movement. MAGA influencers love ex-leftists. Anyone who says, "I want to be part of the online right," gets welcomed. Anyone who even criticizes the left a smidgen gets invitations from MAGA people to join their cult. And anyone with a big right-wing following can truthfully say, "We built this city on canceled former leftists." Except that maybe that's not true anymore. The mindset summarized by this comic and by the adage, "The right looks for converts, the left looks for traitors," may have just been a phenomenon of the 2014 through 2024 internet. I mean, this comic is extremely 2014. These days, I feel like that adage is reversing. You are beginning to see shit like this on the right, I think because the right kind of has a sense that now they're winning and they aren't the underdogs anymore, so they can afford to shrink their coalition. The side that sees itself as the bullied nerds looks for converts. The side that sees itself as the cool kids table looks for traitors. You don't see the nerds saying, "You can't sit with us," in a high school movie, do you? Because people are less likely to want to join them, and beggars can't be choosers. Now there's this sense that the right has won the culture in addition to winning the presidency, a phenomenon that definitely wasn't the case the first time Trump was president. So people do want to join the right just for clout, and so the high school cafeteria dynamic has flipped. Interestingly, that also makes the side that thinks it's losing more vulnerable to grifters. There's more money in becoming a right-wing influencer because they don't throw you out on your ass at the slightest transgression the way leftists used to. Now that leftists are more welcoming and open-minded than they were just a few years ago, I do have to wonder if we'll see the rise of an alt-left pipeline promoted by slick Ben Shapiro-esque leftist influencers who don't believe what they're saying and are only in it for the money. At least cancel culture vaccinates you against that kind of thing. For now, all I can say is, I'm glad that my fans who disagree with me are so nice about it. Leftists definitely acted like the cool kids table until recently, but I feel like they really are less censorious and snooty now. Case in point, these nice comments. I hope that I can keep up having a respectful and politically diverse audience. We have a really good thing going. Here's another question. What historical figure would you most like to interview? Dixie Lee Ray, the one-term 1970s governor of Washington State. Remember how I said, like, transgender, transhumanist, autistic tech people are the greatest people on the planet? Dixie Lee Ray might have been one. I'm pretty sure at the time she was a butch lesbian. I mean, she was obviously a butch lesbian. But I think if she were alive today, she would be trans mask. And I would describe her ultimately as, like, if Grimes grew up amid Pacific Northwest lumberjacks and went into science and then politics instead of music and became a marine biologist, then a nuclear scientist, then governor of Washington State, in that order. One of the most unique political figures in American history. I love her so much. Time for some fan art. I told you there was more of it. This is by the one and only true and honest Q-Tip on the Discord. I want to believe I have a fan who's a member of a tribe called Quest, but whether or not it's the same Q-Tip, I love it so. Jollibee's got bedroom eyes. This adorable little animation was put together by Callan McGuire on Instagram. Do we have Thimble fan art too? You bet we got Thimble fan art. This is by Girl Complex on the Discord. This one's by Q-Tip. We love Thimble. We love Thimble and her sassy little side eye. We all love Thimble. We all scream for Thimble. And if you watch this video without subscribing and turning on notifications, you'll be screaming because of Thimble in a different way. She's just a doll. She's just a cute, sweet little doll, unless you're one of her enemies. And lastly, lies. Tell me lies. Tell me sweet little lies. Tell me lies. There's a channel on the Taurus Cabinet Discord simply called Lies. Thank you, Amanita, for the idea. And from here on out, in every other video, I'll feature one particular post in that channel as the lie of the week. Right now, the Lies channel is brand new, so there are some pretty good lies in there for the first week. I can't pick out one of them as lie of the week, so I guess I'll just have to name two of them. Jenny Girl, me and Tor have a secret affair child kept in cryostasis at 66 degrees 5 minutes, 21.7104 seconds north, 215 degrees, 1 minute, 2.4096 seconds east. I like so many things about this lie, from the use of non-decimal fractional parts of the coordinates, the fact that our secret affair child is way up north right by the Arctic Circle, the use of 215 degrees east, which is a weird but not technically invalid line of longitude. The typical way you'd write that is 145 degrees west. And the sheer precision of these coordinates, like, these coordinates could point to one specific crib in a mysterious Arctic facility where supervillains' children are kept in cryostasis. And it looks like our secret love child is in Alaska, which is a lovely place. I love Alaska. Nice place to raise an evil child. Thank you for the lie, Jenny Girl. Another terrific lie from fan artist Q-Tip. Jollibee comes from a mothership full of durians and durianettes. Every day, they await his return to the glorious Durian Empire. If you look up into the night sky somewhere in Guangzhou and see a suspiciously durian-shaped constellation, just know in your heart they are waiting for him. Thank you, friends. It's been a long, strange few months with the cabinet. Here's to many years of curiosities to come.